Welcome to episode 272 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us, listener. I'm your host, Ian Martin, and today we're going to be finding all about the Zillertal region in the Austrian Tyrol, then crossing the Atlantic to learn more about Deer Valley in Utah, as well as hearing about how Val d'Isère are helping skiers to feel safer. We also have snow reports from Japan, Lapland, and we hear from our Welsh ski specialist on conditions in the Brecon Beacons. But before we meet today's guest, I'd like to thank Tyrol Austria for sponsoring the Ski Podcast and making this winter's episodes possible. If this is your first time listening, you've already missed out on some great conversations about Tyrol. We've already covered Innsbruck, Ischgl, Tyrol West, Sanjahen in Tyrol, Ski Arlberg, the Ski Veldt, the Ski Juel areas. You can catch up with all of these, and I highly recommend you do. I've really enjoyed finding out more about the Tyrol and the Lebensgefühl, that Austrian way of life that connects them all. Now, that leads me to our guest today. As my first guest joins us live from the Tyrol, I'm delighted to welcome Kate Saringer, owner of the eponymous Kate Saringer International Language Service and based in Meierhofen. Hi, Kate. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Am I right? Are you in Meierhofen just now?
I'm slightly outside Meierhofen in Finkenberg.
Okay. And how's snow looking just now in the Zillertal?
Pretty good, actually. We hadn't had loads of snow, but it's been extremely cold. So the snow we've had has not left us. So it's good. The mountains are perfect. Down here in the valley, we'd prefer to have less snow, if I'm perfectly honest, with all the driving. No, it's white. It's picture perfect.
Yeah, well, as far as like holidaymakers, probably listeners of the podcast are concerned, the more snow, the better. They don't have to particularly get around. It's morning, not afternoon, for my second guest today. I'm very pleased to be joined by Emily Summers, Director of Communications at Deer Valley Ski Resort in the USA. Hi, Emily. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you.
Are you based just now in Deer Valley in the mountains?
Yes. Yep. Deer Valley is located in Park City, Utah, about 40 minutes outside of Salt Lake City or the International Airport. And yeah, that's where I'm based.
Oh, and I think it was perhaps a relatively slow start to the season over in Utah, but you've also had snow recently as well.
Yes, definitely a slow start, slower than I think we've ever seen, but we have turned the corner. We've got some great snow in early January. We've been able to make snow, and we are looking for some storms in the coming days.
Oh, well, that is exciting. Now, a question I always like to ask my guests at the top of the podcast is, when did you ski or snowboard last? Kate, when would that be for you?
I think about 3 years ago. I don't ski.
Okay. Where was that 3 years ago?
It was at the Hintertux Glacier. It ended up with me being flown off by helicopter after being skied into by somebody else, and I hung my skis up for good after that. I didn't come here for the skiing. I came here for love and stayed. And I love watching people enjoy the slopes. My children, my grandchildren are fantastic skiers. They enjoy it. I just don't.
Okay. Well, I mean, I completely understand that. And actually fits into our conversation about safe skiing. We might come back to that a little bit later on. Let me ask Emily then, what about yourself? When were you last on snow?
3 days ago at Deer Valley, and it was my five-year-old daughter's first full day of ski school, and she didn't want us to pick her up. She had such a good time, so it's a pretty memorable day for us.
That is exciting. Now, I'm kind of figuring if you live in a ski resort that five, she's probably done a bit of skiing before. You're saying this was her first official ski school, was it?
This was her first full day of ski school. She has been very spoiled. Deer Valley is so great. They have a preschool here in the community. And so she's been going there up until this year and had weekly lessons included with preschool. So she is a ripping five-year-old, and I learned to ski as an adult. So I'm going to have to work to keep up with her.
Oh, well, currently I'm still better than my kids, but they're both doing ski seasons at the moment. So I'm hoping I'm going to be able to continue to outlast them. They are out in Courchevel and Mirabel, respectively. And I was in Courchevel last weekend visiting them. There was a huge snowstorm over in Courchevel. Probably had, I would say, 40 to 60 centimetres at around Courchevel 1850. More higher up, it was quite windy, though. But conditions in the Three Valleys, certainly very good. Although regular listeners will know, I didn't actually get the chance to enjoy them myself because, like Kate, I did have an injury a little while ago when I was out in St. Anton. I fractured my scapula. Not quite back up to skiing yet, but hopefully next month. But let's have a listen to some snow reports from some of our contributors from around the world. Firstly, let's listen to Robin Shah, who's out in Japan at the moment. I'm really interested to listen to his report. Jen Sang from the website That Sort of Plan is in the Plan. And Mike Richards, our Wales specialist, reports on skiing in Wales.
Hi, Ian. It's Robin here reporting from central Hokkaido, often called home to some of the lightest snow on earth, and it hasn't disappointed. I'm standing here at Kamui Ski Links, where we ski today, and it sums up this trip perfectly. When most UK skiers think of Hokkaido, they picture the southwest of the island around Niseko, close to Sapporo and the main international airport. We've done something a bit different, flying straight into Asahikawa Airport and basing ourselves in Kamikawa at Yukiyumi House, right in the heart of central Hokkaido. The area is home to places like Furano, Asahidake, Kurodake, and smaller gems like Kamui Ski Links. It's quieter, more spread out, and much more focused on ski touring and freeriding. We've had 6 days on snow so far, 3 lift-served days at Kurodake, Asahidake, and Kamui, and 3 days ski touring straight from the roadside trailheads when the wind's been blowing up high. Every day has delivered. We've had lap after lap of light, cold, deep powder. It is incredibly consistent and really unlike anything you'll experience anywhere else. The season here has started really strongly. Kurodake is reporting about 3.5 meters of snow. And after a brief warm spell at the weekend, snowfall has returned across the whole island. The bigger name resorts are firing. Furano picked up 75 centimetres at the top a couple of days ago, and Niseko got about 50 centimetres. So, in summary, central Hokkaido offers lighter snow, fewer crowds, and incredible touring options when the weather is wild. It feels like the real heart of Hokkaido winter. This is Robin, reporting from Kamui Links in central Hokkaido. Back to you, Ian.
Hi, Ian and the Ski Podcast. What an honour it is to be back in your ears again in 2026, live from the slopes of Le Plan. This is Jen from That's Le Plan, and I am cruising down the lovely blue slopes, quiet and empty blue slopes, towards Montalbert today while I tell you all about the snow conditions here in resort. So, of course, unless you've been living under a rock, you will have seen we had a fantastic, huge dump of snow across the Alps, across the Northern Alps. And we had easily over 70 centimetres of snow, but probably closer to a metre of snow throughout Le Plan, from the lower levels all the way down in the valley in Aim, all the way up to the glacier where it was much, much deeper, of course. Fantastic news, because it had been a completely dry December. What has unfortunately happened as well, I'm sure you've seen in the news, is that we have since then experienced an awful lot of avalanches and quite unstable conditions. And it has been a tough week in Le Plan because we have seen some injuries, and we also have seen a man tragically lose his life in an area that would be classed as a very easy off-piste area, very close to the lifts. So it has been a tough week, and serves as a reminder to always make sure when you're heading off-piste, whatever the conditions, to do your risk assessment daily, almost hourly, and make sure you have the correct equipment with you. And on that note, moving on to what the conditions are actually like on-piste, I can say, in a word, fabulous. Considering we had no snow through December, the conditions on piste were incredible. And this dump of snow, now it's been bashed up and groomed into the piste, is truly fantastic. It feels like floating down the slopes right now. And the joy of it is, it's January, so there's really few people here. The slopes are empty, and I'm cruising down to Montalbert on the Montalbert piste, all alone, in glorious sunshine. Absolutely fabulous. This is what Thursday afternoons should look like. So this has been it from Jen in That's Le Plan. I hope to see you on the slopes very soon. Take care, Ian, and yeah, I'll be here again soon. Bye-bye now.
Good afternoon, Ian. Blwyddyn newydd dda. It's Mike the Snow Richards wishing you and your listeners a happy new year. And it's been a very happy and snowy start to 2026 in Banne Berheiniog, the Brecon Beacons National Park in South Wales. We've had a fantastic week courtesy of Storm Goretti, with our growing band of dedicated skiers and snowboarders enjoying powder turns on the slopes flowing from the summit plateau of Penavan. At 886 metres, it's the highest point in southern Britain. Monday the 5th saw my regular ski partner Chris and I skinning from the Pont Ar Daf car park beside the A470 to the top of southern Britain under breathless blue skies. We were joined by an Irian from Caerphilly who had skied with Chris the previous afternoon, dodging the rocks at Herbert's Quarry in Carmarthenshire further west. The turns were fast, with the feather-like powder exploding on each turn, and after lapping the upper slopes, we were able to ski right back to the car park. A rare treat. Chris was able to set up his Zoa Engineering PL1 personal lift system on the ridgeline below Penavan, and after burying the top of the rope in the snow, we were able to ski down 300 metres below us, feed the rope through the pulley wheels on the portable unit, and let the electric motor whisk us back up the hill for more laps. To the onlooker, it looked like we were water skiing up the mountain. It's a real conversation starter, and the visiting skiers from and boarders from as far afield as Bristol, Birmingham, and even Portsmouth loved it. They weren't expected to see it, let alone have the chance to try it out. And it certainly makes the time on the mountain more social and fun. Tuesday brought rain down low, which completely decimated the snowpack, leaving just the highest peaks and ridgelines snow-covered, with Chris and South Wales snowboarding pioneer Jeff Parr making tracks up high the following day in the grey of a January afternoon. Thursday, Storm Goretti stopped play, but Chris and Irene and I were pleasantly surprised on the morning of Friday, the 9th, to see the snow line back down to the car park. Three became four as my nephew Will from Aberdare joined us on the skin up the main path. We were hoping for clear skies, but unfortunately spent the day skiing and boarding inside a golf ball. We set up the rope tow again and made laps in the mist before skiing back to the car park. Saturday the 10th brought blue skies, sunshine and visibility, and 30 skiers and snowboarders put on a show for the walkers heading to and from Penavan. As is quite normal for Wales, the temperature has risen and the rain has washed all the snow away. But the long-range forecast is showing a storm system moving in at the end of the month, which could give us a repeat of this fantastic week of homegrown snow play. If you're in the vicinity, bring your gear, come and say hi, and enjoy some turns with me. Because if it's snowing, I'm going. This has been Mike Richards, and I hope your listeners are enjoying great and safe turns in the mountains.
I doubt there's anyone listening to this podcast who's not aware of the tragic events that took place in Crans-Montana over New Year. Now, that story has been covered in detail by the mainstream press, so I don't propose to cover it here, other than to say that I'm sure the thoughts of all of us are with the families affected. The regular listeners will know that I've reported from Crans-Montana for the podcast several times in both summer and winter, and it remains a fantastic destination. But I'm sure emotionally it will take the community time to recover from this. So I just want to let anyone connected with the town and the area know that we are thinking of them. Right, this episode will go live on Friday the 16th of January. And that will be exactly 3 weeks before the Milano Cortina Winter Olympics start in Italy. There's a lot to look forward to in these games. I'm sure there'll be many amazing stories that will unfold. I think all eyes will be on Lindsey Vonn, who's having an amazing season. But the majority of our listeners are from the UK. So let's check in on how our British athletes are getting on. If you listened to last week's episode, you'll have heard Kirsty Muir's story. Now, she is 20 years younger than Lindsey Vonn, but she has in common with her the fact that she's come back from serious injury to win in the World Cup. And last week, the very day our episode came out, the 21-year-old won her second event of the year with the gold at the Slopestyle in Aspen to add to her win in the Big Air in China. So Kirsty is in great form and a genuine contender for the podium in Italy. Also in the last week, 22-year-old Zoe Atkin came second in the ski halfpipe, also in Aspen. That's a gold and two silvers in three events for her so far this season. So I think we can firmly say she is another British athlete who could be coming home with a medal. Now, I interviewed Zoe just over a year ago in episode 238. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes if you'd like to know more about her. As we record today, the Larks Open is taking place in Switzerland, which will see reigning Crystal Globe champion Mia Brooks back in action. The 18-year-old has only had one outing so far this winter, which saw her take first place in the Big Air in China in early December. This will be her first Slopestyle since finishing sixth in the World Champs in March. So I'll keep you posted on all of their progress on the Ski Podcast. And as promised, it looks like I'll be putting in some overtime to bring you updates during the games. I'm still working on that at the moment, but I'm hoping to do an episode maybe every other day or three times a week, something like that. Right, let's move on to Zillertal. It has been so interesting finding out about the different areas of the Tyrol so far. And I'm really looking forward to finding out more about the Zillertal. And in fact, I'm not making this up. I literally had an email from a listener earlier today. He said, oh, well, you're going to be covering Zillertal. Because I'm going there at half term. So this is perfect timing for her. Kate, I wondered first, you said that you came to the region for love. I wondered if I could ask you about your connection with the area.
Well, it all happened a long time ago. And I met this rather attractive young man in southern England, in Dorset. He couldn't speak English and I couldn't speak German, but he had great legs and it's one thing led to another. It turns out he was from the Valley, 18 years old. You know, it wasn't anything serious, but he said he had to go back to Austria to do his national service. And would I like to come with him and see where he came from? And it happened to be Tillertal. So that's where it all started. I came with him.
So 40 years later, and right now you run your own translation business. And am I right in thinking that part of that involves working on the World Cup circuit? You said to me in the green room, you're going to be in Kitzbühel next week?
I am. I leave on Sunday for Kitzbühel. I opened my interpreter service and translation business in 2006 and quite inadvertently got involved with the World Cup. I've been in the box for the last 17 years for the Hannon Cam races.
Yeah, I mean, that must be pretty exciting because probably the Hannon Cam is the most famous race on the circuit where lots of people have made their careers there. You get a view of the course and can watch it all, can you?
And all the men in Lycra. Yes, it's great. A couple of years ago, I pushed the flower girl off the winner's podium so I could stand next to Dave riding because I was like, oh, there's no way you're accompanying him. That's my job. It's they put a hugely impressive show on every year. And yeah, it's the centre of the downhill universe.
And you mentioned the downhill. Evidently, you mentioned Dave riding. There's a slalom race there as well. I think Dave has a good record there. He's obviously won a race there before. We have our fingers crossed that he'll be able to continue that form and take it through to next week as well. Let's talk a little bit more about the Zillertal then. Now, I know from my O-level German that Tal means valley. So I'm guessing the river Ziller runs through it, does it?
It does, not from start to bottom, because to start with, it's the tributary valleys where the glacier and snow-fed streams run into various rivers that then merge into the Ziller about halfway down or to one third down, and that's the Ziller River site.
Cool. And could you give us a sense of where it is in Austria then and how you would get there?
Yeah, Zillertal is very close to Innsbruck. We are in Western Austria in Tyrol, close to the Italian border. You can, in fact, walk to Italy faster than you can drive it from here. Very accessible. Innsbruck Airport is less than an hour away. It's easy transfer into the valley. You can either hire a car or public transport's fantastic.
Yeah, I tend to travel by train when I go out to the Alps, and so I know how easy it is to get to Innsbruck. So from Innsbruck, can you take a train? I'm thinking because it's in the valley, you can probably take a train directly into the resorts.
You can. There's a couple of changes from Innsbruck Airport. There's a bus to the main train station in Innsbruck. Then a couple of stops down the line, it's Jenbach, where you change to the Zillertalbahn, which is the train or bus services into the valley, serves all the major villages through and down the valley.
And actually, just to clarify, I'm talking about taking the train all the way from the UK. You know, I've done this for the last few years now to different places. If I was going to Innsbruck, I would probably take the Eurostar up to Amsterdam and then take the OBB Nightjet down from Amsterdam through to Innsbruck. And then obviously you can connect, as you mentioned there. So we're talking about a region, Zillertal. It's like a ski resort called Zillertal. So could you tell us which resorts make up the Zillertal?
Zillertal is actually made up of four holiday resorts. We have Fugenkaltenbach at the beginning of the valley, followed by Zellgerlos, which is very extensive, goes right through to the Salzburg provincial border and over. And then we've got Meierhofen-Hippach and Tux Finkenberg.
And altogether, that's a lot of kilometres of piste. I actually looked it up. Tell me if this is right, but I've got 548 kilometres of piste and 180 lifts, all covered on a single lift pass.
It's 546 kilometres, just to be absolutely okay. Precise. But yes, 180 lifts and all covered on the one Zillertal Super Ski Pass.
Yeah, so how do they link up then? Can you ski across the whole area, or do sometimes you need, if you wanted to like ski the whole area, maybe get a bus between some of the resorts? Is that how that works?
Exactly that. They're not all interlinked. They're quite expensive each in their own right. But to get from one resort to the next, for the four are interlinked by either bus or train services, which your ski pass also covers.
You mentioned that, unfortunately, your accident was up on the Hintertux Glacier. I mean, the fact that you have glacier skiing there is a huge bonus. Again, I looked this up, 3,250 metres at the top. I'm pretty sure that means you can guarantee skiing through, well, pretty much all of the year. What months is the Hintertux Glacier open?
Well, it opens in October and goes through till early summer, depending on conditions. Yeah, it's always quite novel to go up to the top in summer and have a snowball fight and come down to 35 degrees in an outdoor swimming pool session in August. So yeah, we have the best of everything.
Sure, and a lot of the freestyle skiers and snowboarders that I mentioned go up to Hintertooks for training in the summer months, don't they?
They do indeed. Lots of national teams are up here. My son is quite a talented snowboarder. He's doing all the flips I never go to watch because I can't bear the thought of him hurting himself. But yes, there's a huge amount of training that goes on here in the summer months.
Yeah, I know what you mean. My son did his first backflip last year and I wasn't there to see it. I just saw it on video and it scares the life out of me. Tell me a little bit more about the skiing then. Who would you say the skiing in Zillertal is for? Obviously, it's a big area. Does it cover everyone from beginner to expert?
It really does. There's every type of slope and every type of style that's catered for. You've got the parks, you've got wide open blue slopes. The mountains I know in Meierhofen, the Ahorn is particularly suitable for families and beginners. Big, expansive slopes. You've also got the downhill down to the valley. Penken is quite extensive. It goes out close to the glacier again. You can ski huge amount of slopes up there for every level of ability. So, like I say, from beginner right through to absolute expert.
And also, I mean, I did quite a bit of research looking around the website. I noticed that there are a lot of non-ski activities as well. 460 kilometres of hiking trails, a lot of cross country and a lot of tobogganing as well. I don't know how many runs there are. Is there one in every resort?
I can't tell you how many runs there are, but there are a lot. And this is where you get to where my interests lie, because I'm a non-skier, but I'm a tobogganer. Cross country is not my forte, but I try every year. There's loads on. You can ski in summer and winter. There's ice climbing, rubber ring that you can sit in and slide down. There's children's slopes, nursery slopes that are just for children, free of use, both in Ginsling and the Horbergbahn, where they can just trundle up and go down for nothing. And it caters for children as well as adults if they want to go further afield.
Oh, with my current injury, when I was in Courchevel last week, you know, I wasn't skiing. So actually, I took a sudden interest in all the hiking trails. And, you know, these things are much more relevant to me and more interesting. And, you know, over there, specifically, I had a fantastic time just walking down to a lake. And sometimes it can be nice to take a break off the mountain. It was so peaceful when I did that. I'm going to say one thing about Meierhofen, which is the main resort that people would probably have heard of over the others. And that is known for not necessarily being so quiet, because it has a tremendous reputation for après-ski. I'm sure many of our listeners will have heard of snow bombing, a big event that takes place there every year. The resort will also be hosting the British Snowboard and Freestyle Championships. That takes place in the Penken Park at the end of March. And if you'd like to know more about last year's event, you can listen to episode 245, when I spoke to organiser Steve Brass all about that. Would you say that reputation that Meierhofen has for après is justified?
If you're looking for it, you'll find it. It's more contained now. It doesn't spill out onto the streets. The current guest isn't looking for it as much as it perhaps did 15, 20 years ago. But you'll find it, like I say, if you want it. But you'll also find an awful lot of more refined wineries, eateries, where you can sit out on the road. You can sit out on the street there with there's no traffic up and down the high street between 3 and 6 p.m., which means you can walk up and down in peace, have a quiet drink, a Glühwein or something, without being affected by the après-ski that does go on, but it's not visible from the outside.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's come across to me from all of our conversations about Tyrol, and particularly from, you know, my visit to Tyrol recently, is that the level of gastronomy is extremely good. But one area that really appeals to me are all the mountain huts. I wondered if you have a kind of favourite stop on the mountain for a hot chocolate break or something like that. Is it feasible to pick one out from all the different places that are available?
Well, yes, in my neck of woods. And had we still had our restaurants, one thing I didn't mention is we had restaurants in Meierhofen for 15 years, my husband and I. It's what enabled us to build our house. But yes, so walking around the mountains, I like to go to the Christenbach Alm, which is in Ginsling. Lovely wooden chalet, her family run, make fantastic cakes. It's the top of a toboggan run. It's a good hour and a half walk to get there. And you can have a huge slab of cake and a great hot chocolate or a Glühwein before you slide back down. And again, the Bichl Alm is in Tux. Another great walk up there. Beautifully sunny. and they'll just provide you with free sleds, as does the Klittenbachhorn, just to slide down to the bottom again. They're my two favourite tips.
All right, cool. Okay, I will find links to those and put them into the show notes. When I was in St. Anton, I got to try both Grostel and Kaiserschmarrn, which I've talked about and heard about, you know, so much, and they were fantastic. Something I've been asking lots of our guests from the Tyrol, outside of those two, is there any particular local dish that you would recommend visitors to try?
I'd always go cheese-based. There are lots of independent dairies here, as well as the local Tillertal dairy, that make fabulous cheese. And they have a whole array of what are called Kropfen. Now, Kropfen are multifaceted. You have the festival Kropfen around carnival time, which is filled with jam, like a donut. Or you have a Holzknecht Kropfen, which is like an omelette filled with potatoes and cheese mix, covered in brown butter, or you have Kaspressknödel, which are cheesy dumplings, or Zillertal Kropfen, which are fritters filled with cheese and potato filling and deep fried. They are to die for.
Cool. That sounds fantastic. I haven't tried or even heard of all of those, so I'm going to have to do a bit of extra research and drop something into the show notes as well. That's brilliant, Kate. Thanks so much for that. I found out a lot more about Zillertal, and hopefully, I think it was Claire Harrison who contacted me and asked if we were going to do an episode. Hopefully, Claire, that's answered all of your questions prior to your trip next month as well. Thanks so much, Kate. If it's okay with you, I'm going to turn to Emily now. Thanks for joining us this morning, Emily. Utah has been on my list for a long time. I will be going there one day to sample the greatest snow on earth trademark. That is a trademark of Utah, right?
It is. And I agree. I think it's fantastic.
I mean, you have a ridiculous amount of snowfall on average every winter. I looked it up earlier. I think, and you can tell me if this is wrong, 762 centimetres, which is equivalent to 300 inches, or is average snowfall, right?
Yeah, and that's average snowfall in Park City area where Deer Valley is located. And we actually are within an hour of seven resorts here in Utah. And so as you get into the canyons, there's even more, a higher average as you go higher. So yeah, we kind of have everything here in Utah right in our area.
Cool. And it's something about the quality of that snow. It's something to do with how the weather comes over the Great Salt Lake and then comes up into those mountains and just delivers you this really light powder. Now, is that just a PR, or is that really how it works?
That's I think I'm an amateur meteorologist these days after being in this business for so long, but that is the story that we're told over and over. The storms do come over the Great Salt Lake. The salt dries out the system, and we do tend to see really dry storms here.
Yeah, well, I've been to Salt Lake before. I went there a couple of years ago when I went up to Utah and Montana, but it was in the summer. I will be going there to ski at some point. But I think Deer Valley and the resorts that you mentioned are very close to the airport. It's a short transfer, right?
Very close. It's honestly one of the best things about being in Utah. It was surprising when I moved here too. Deer Valley is about 40 minutes from the Salt Lake City International Airport. The air transfers out of that facility are amazing. We have direct flights to Heathrow, I think, daily. And so it's really amazing, the accessibility we have here in Utah. And Deer Valley is one of seven that are an hour from the airport.
And just to get a sense of the altitude, what sort of height would Deer Valley be at the base station and then the top stations as well?
So here's my American math for you. But our base elevation is now actually in our new base area, the Deer Valley East Village, which opened last year. And we're at just under 2,000 meters there. And then our top elevation is just under 3,000 meters.
Dan, I appreciate you converting it into meters. Around 20% of our listeners are in the States and they speak feet. But most of the listeners on the podcast speak meters, so that's great. You mentioned about the new Deer Valley East Village. There's been a lot of changes in Deer Valley over the last couple of seasons. I think I'm right in saying that there were three new lifts last year and seven new lifts this year. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that expansion that's going on, because I think it's unprecedented in terms of North American resorts, certainly since resorts were first constructed.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they tell me. I have been at Deer Valley for 20 years, and they always had spoken about, we would stand on that ridgeline on Bald Mountain and look over to our east and say, you know, one day we're going to be skiing in there, and one day we're going to be skiing in there. And that day happened about a year ago through numerous land exchanges and opportunities and summer exchanges to do with the Olympics. And anyway, we ended up with a whole new area out of Deer Valley. And basically we have over doubled in size in the last year. So this is the new base area called the Deer Valley East Village. And I think it's 100 new trails now and 10 new lifts. And that opened in a year. So I'm out there exploring, learning. It feels like a whole new resort. And it's all the same staff and the same service and the same experience that you would expect at Deer Valley if you've been before, just with a lot more skiing.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty amazing because certainly there's no way that that would happen in Europe, actually putting in a new piece and exploring a new part of the mountain wouldn't happen, I don't think. There's a lot of environmental limiters. How was that possible? Mm-hmm. You could, prior to the areas becoming pisted or groomed areas mm-hmm. with lifts, you could ski those areas as backcountry as part of the Deer Valley terrain?
Not as part of Deer Valley. So this land is privately owned. It's under a nature conservation. So in the summer, we are also goat shepherds, I think is what we became when we signed the lease to operate this land. So there's a lot of components to it. But bottom line, the land is privately owned, but is under a jurisdiction here in Utah called MIDA. And that's Military Installation Development Authority. And so basically, to develop this area as a ski resort, there had to be anchor property for our military services and the veterans and that community and their family and friends. And so the Grand Hyatt Deer Valley opened last year, and a quarter of their rooms are held into a program called Salute to Service. And so really that military jurisdiction is what was able to develop this into a recreational facility or recreational area. And then in August of 2023, Deer Valley became the operator. And that's how, in a very, very tight story, Deer Valley was able to expand in this way. And yeah, I don't think it's happening. Land is a finite resource. And so it's pretty amazing, this opportunity that we're in, and to be able to just make Deer Valley bigger and better.
Yeah, it's amazing. You mentioned that I think the skiable area has doubled already, but that's going to go up even further, isn't it?
It is. You are so right. We're in a multi-year expansion. So we were about a year ahead, which again, it feels really crazy to say, last year when we opened 3 lifts and 20 runs. And then this year we're opening 7 more lifts. We have 2 currently running, 80 more ski runs, and we're opening more and more every day with those. We have doubled the snowmaking system. So we added 4 new pump houses, and I think it's 80 miles of pipe. You're going to have to help me with math there again, but we're just doubling kind of everything. We've got 2 more on mountain lodges coming online in the next couple of years. And then even next year, we'll add another lift and 7 more runs. And then there's even more land available on South Peak in future years.
It's just incredible, really. The expansion is greater than most ski resorts on their own. That's just the added area. Something I was interested in when I was finding out more about it was about how you came up. You're saying you've got, you know, an extra 100 new runs. They all have names, right? So who sits down and works out what you're going to call the new runs, and where do you get those names from?
Okay, well, there's a handful of us. And I was, last time Deer Valley expanded was in the 2007-08 season with our Lady Morgan Mountain. And that was 7 runs and 1 lift. And we sat around a table and we did it the same way with this 100 runs and 10 lifts. It was just much more intense. And I said something, who's Lady Morgan? You know, I said that name. All of these names at Deer Valley have always come from the silver mining history in Park City. And Deer Valley sits on top of numerous old silver mines, silver claims. We have infrastructure, especially in the new area that you'll see and you'll ski by. We work with our local historical foundations and we refurbish some of these mining headwalls and infrastructure that sits on the mountains. And then we put on historical tours and we have plaques around the mountains. So you'll see some of the names of runs. And we sat down with the mining claim map And we went through and we picked all of the names that we thought could be a great ski run. And so it's really fun then to kind of say, oh my gosh, we have all this new high alpine beginner terrain. Look it, we have Junebug, Humbug, Dream Meadow, Straddlebug. And so it's like, that would be the greatest beginner's area, high alpine. And then you have names like Carbonite, Redemption, and those are those black diamonds that we're dying to get into, you know? So they all come from silver mining.
Do you claim any of them for yourself? Is there any particular one where you said, right, I name that run, that's my run?
No, but we did all of this last summer and I can't help it. I'm a Swiftie. And so we have an Ophelia one. And so that's my run that I'm excited to be skiing this winter. It hasn't opened yet, but the marketing team did dress up as our favorite new runs this Halloween. And I was Ophelia. So we do all kind of have our eye on a couple. One of my favorite things too is you will be skiing and see a lot of spelling mistakes. We actually take the integrity of how the miners spelled it, which was a whole new challenge in this world of autocorrect. We're like, no, it's Humbug, not Hambug. And Carbonite has the wrong vowels. But it's something Deer Valley's always done. One of our runs when we hosted the slalom in the 02 games is no, you don't. And it's K-N-O-W. And it's just because that's how it was on the mining map. So we were really lucky to still have so many names to use and to be able to kind of keep that theme. And it's a great tie to our history.
That sounds very smart, calling one of the names for the Swifties. I'm sure that will bring lots of people in just to have their photo taken next to it. I did read there's a painting of Ophelia in a museum in Germany. I can't remember exactly where it is. It might be Hanover. And they've been overrun with Swifties, you know, turning up who want to actually go and see it. So if it gets Swifties interested in art,
I love
and
it.
Interested in skiing, then that's really good. All the new lifts are coming in through an arrangement with Doppelmayr, who I think are an Austrian company. I wondered if you wanted to pick out any of the new lifts in particular that someone coming to Deer Valley should look out for.
I would love to. We have two currently running that I think are amazing because they've significantly changed the way skiers will flow around Deer Valley. And they've really added access to this new peak that we've never skied on before in terms of Deer Valley skiers and in our boundaries. And it's called Park Peak. And it sits behind Bald Mountain and it's above the tree line. And this is where I'm saying the high alpine green terrain that's come online. And we have a new ski run that goes from the top of Park Peak down to the base of East Village called the Green Monster. And it's one of the longest green runs you'll find in the US. And it's just under 5 miles. So really incredible skiing and views. And these two lifts that we have open as of today are our new 10 passenger gondola, the East Village gondola, and the Pinion Express, which is a new 6-pack bubble, which is really changing the game for beginners, including, we mentioned my 5-year-old daughter. We rode it with her, and I cannot believe the way she skied just having access to this bubble lift in the middle and all this new green terrain.
These are actually D-line lifts as well, which is a specific type of a lift from Doppelmayr. I wonder if you explain what that means or what skiers will notice from that.
Yeah, so Doppelmayr has been a great partner. We've gotten all of their most advanced, wonderful lifts. My understanding is D-Line is their detachable, high-speed, modern lift system. And really what you'll notice is smoother operation, higher capacity, advanced features that compared to their older lifts. But as a skier, it's better ride comfort. It's quieter. It's more efficient.
We love new lifts like that. I mean, it sounds a lot like some of the bigger European resorts, interconnected, seamless. But we mentioned that extension isn't even done yet. You mentioned the base, the Deer Valley East Village. You know, that's still under construction. I think you said the Hyatt has opened already, but there's more hotels planned, including, I read, a 6-star hotel. What do you get in a 6-star hotel?
You know, I will find out with you guys. It's all amazing what's happening over there. But right, the Grand Hyatt Deer Valley is the flagship property, and they have been open. This is our second season. Ground has broken on a Four Seasons. That's coming in the next few years. A Hilton Canopy is opening. And then there's more to come. You know, we're working in partnership with Extel, the developer over there, but many more hotels to come.
The guys who make the lift and run maps must be getting a lot of overtime because it's changing every single season. I should probably point out as well that Deer Valley is on the Icon Pass, I think. So that includes, you know, Zermatt, Chamonix, lots of big areas in Europe. So listen, if it's a big year for you and you're skiing in Europe and you're thinking about going in the States as well, it could be worth investing, although I think it's actually cheaper to buy it earlier. So maybe planning ahead for next year. Can I ask another question, Emily? You mentioned briefly there the Olympics. We've been talking about the upcoming Olympics next month. But I think the games after next in 2034 are going to be hosted in Utah.
We're getting them back. I'm so excited. I moved here in 2006 and I always thought, man, I really missed out, but we're coming back. And they're really formatted similar to how they were in the 02 games. The infrastructure here in Utah was never stopped being used, which is really incredible. And again, it just goes back to kind of the accessibility of the state, the way the games were run so well in 02. And a lot of athletes in our programs, like the U.S. ski team, relocated here to Park City. And so we have a lot of programs where a lot of our athletes train here year round, live here now. You mentioned we'll be watching Lindsey Vonn. She skis at Deer Valley, so we're cheering her on.
Cool. Well, you know, exciting times at Deer Valley for sure. I really appreciate you sharing that with us, Emily. I'll put a number of links in the show notes so listeners can find out a little bit more about it. If it's okay, I'm just going to move on now. I mentioned the safe skiing side of things. If you listen to episode 270, you'll have heard Nicole Feliciano talking about the Slow Skiers Club. And calling on ski resorts to take action to offer more dedicated, easy skiing areas. Well, I knew that Val d'Isère had already taken action in this area, and I actually spoke to them earlier this week. I spoke to Cecile Ferrando from the Tourist Board about their new Ski Tranquille zones. Today, I'm delighted to welcome Cecile Ferrando, who is the directrice of the Val d'Isère Tourist Office. Hi, Cecile. How are you?
Hi, Ian. I'm okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you're enjoying lots of great new snow. The Alps have had a lot of snow over the weekend. How much would you say has fallen in Val d'Isère?
Oh, it's fallen more than 70 centimeters in the village. At the top of the resort, we had approximately the same, but it was quite windy up the top, so it's been moving around. But I'm asking the skiers to be careful because conditions are really dangerous off-piste.
Well, I think safety is something that we're definitely interested in the conversation, because I mentioned I read about the different areas of the slopes in Val d'Isère that you've designated as Ski Tranquille. And I wondered if you could tell us what that means.
Ski Tranquille in English is like easy skiing. And we realized that our skiers and snowboarders and all the visitors who came to Val d'Isère, who come to Val d'Isère, want to enjoy their time on the slopes with safety rules around. They're seeking for a moment of contemplation as well with the family, but they want to be safe. And we said with the ski patrol and the ski lift companies, we thought it would be good to make some safe areas. We decided to make this Ski Tranquille area. It's like a dedicated areas where people know they can go and they will be safe. On the piste map, we identified the area, the easy skiing areas. We made new areas for the kids as well, like playing areas, which are really safe. And we can see now that people are really enjoying this area, and they are marked, and they know that once they arrive in the Ski Tranquille, they are safe, and there's no fast skiers going next to them to scare them.
How can skiers who are in the area then identify where these easy skiing areas are?
And we ask the people to follow the Easy Skiing logo. So it's really easy for them to follow the logo and to find the accessible and safe routes. And what we notice as well is that now people are at the end of the day. It's been like 2 or 3 years we're doing that. We said to them, you should go back down with the ski lift because, you know, at the end of the day, people are really tired. And we thought it would be good to make them go down with the lift. You know, in Val d'Isère, we have lots of steep runs at the bottom of the village, and the easy runs are at the top of the ski area. So now we realized that last year we had a 20% increase in descent recorded. So people are using the lift, and it's a good news because they're not hurting themselves at the end of the day when they're tired.
And we were talking about, you know, how skiers and snowboarders would find out what's going on. And I think you use the app. But in terms of trying to encourage people to take the cable car back down, you're using the app to do that as well?
We're using the app. We're using the signs. We're using the ski instructors who have changed their mentality as well. Like 4 or 5 years ago, they were a bit like, oh, no, we don't want to take the cable car. It's like, oh, yeah, we're good skiers. But we noticed that now, all the ski instructors, they realized it's really good for the clients or even for them to go down with the ski lift. We're doing push notification to make people take care of themselves. That's what we really want to do. It's that say to the people, take care of yourself.
And can I ask, how do you kind of control the areas? How do you ensure that they are, you know, easy skiing areas?
We made a special deal with all the pister and all the mountain professionals this year. We asked them to engage themselves for safety and well-being on the slopes, and they had to sign an ambassador charter. They're all trying to explain to the clients, be careful. So it was really important for us to have the involvement of all mountain professionals, because the more people talk about what's happening on the slopes, the easier it will be to make the message understandable for the skiers and snowboarders. We made some special visuals, and the people can find them on the slope. They are also displayed in the village where people are renting their skis. It's like a funny visuals to make them understand all the rules. You know, we have 10 rules on the ski slopes. We tried to make them fun, so people realize that there's some rules to follow when you're skiing.
Sure. I mean, that is also something that we've covered before on the podcast, letting people try to increase awareness of what those rules are. And I did notice, actually, that the French police shared on Facebook just before Christmas a reminder of what those rules of good conduct on the slopes are. So, you know, hopefully, you know, that will help. And I think certainly anyone who is, you know, listening and interested in that idea, what I will make sure I do is I share the link in the show notes so people can see that logo and see where those slopes are, because you've got a really great map on the website, which actually, you know,
shows, yes, you can find them
all the different areas. Yes. That's brilliant, Cécile. Thank you so much for that, and have a great rest of season.
Okay, thank you, Ian. Take care.
So that was really interesting. I think that story will continue. Okay, we're just going to move to the close now. If you've enjoyed this episode, or even if you didn't like it, I would love to know. You can leave a comment on Spotify, Instagram, or Facebook. Our handle is @theskipodcast, or you can drop me an email to theskipodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on WhatsApp for exclusive material released ahead of the podcast, and look in the show notes for that link. Have had some feedback from some of our listeners. Thinking about safe skiing, Colin Tierney said, episode 270 was interesting. I always go at a speed that I feel safe with for me and the people around me. Sounds like a very sensible way of doing it. Stuart Campbell said, the podcasts are brilliant. I've enjoyed the range of topics. The ability to pull in so many different people from so many different countries, which is what we're doing today, is what makes it brilliant. I've just found your piece on St. Anton by train, so I'm hoping to repeat something similar if I make it out in the spring. And Robert Fogg said, been catching up on all the podcasts I've missed. Thanks very much from a wet Cairns in Australia. And finally, co-founder of the podcast, Jim Duncombe, contacted me. He said, I was on the cable car in La Clusa this morning and I ended up chatting with a Norwegian who lives in Annecy. Turns out he's a fan of the podcast. So this one is a shout out for Edwin. Thanks for your support. Enjoy your skiing and the podcast. There are now 290 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with. When I looked this morning, an unbelievable 207 of those have been listened to in the last week alone. So if you would like to get some insight on a particular destination or some kit, just go to skipodcast.com. Have a search around the tags and categories and you're bound to find something you will find interesting to listen to. I can tell you that in that last week, half of our listeners were in the UK, around 20% in the States, and everyone else spread as far and wide as China, Brazil and South Africa. If you'd like to help the Ski Podcast, there are three things you can do. You can follow us or subscribe. You can give us a review on Apple Podcasts or leave a comment on Spotify. And if you're booking ski hire this winter, don't forget you can get an additional discount if you use the code SKIPODCAST when you book at intersportrent.com, or simply take the link in the show notes for your discount to be automatically applied. For now, I would like to thank my guests in the studio today. Thank you very much, Kate,
My pleasure.
And Emily, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
I would like to thank Tyrol for sponsoring the podcast. And finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.